Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Dear wonderful friends, welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm delighted that you could be with us today. You know, the reality we're seeking on Seek Reality is primarily the certainty that our lives are eternal. And, of course, we also want to know the basic details of our wonderful eternal life, makes it more real. But by now, we pretty much know most of that. If you still aren't sure, just contact me through robertagrimes.com and I'll suggest to you how you can become even more certain that we do, in fact, live forever. But we know that now. It's almost old hat. And we're talking here more and more nowadays about the rich new reality that knowledge of our eternal lives is bringing to us. One of those important facts that we're learning is that the greater reality, which is all that exists, is fundamentally spiritual. It's made up and composed of consciousness. Nothing else but consciousness exists. And we come into these lives in order to push back against the negativity here that does not exist in our wonderful eternal lives. So we can raise our personal consciousness vibrations away from fear and toward love and grow spiritually. Come. We believe, in fact, that's the only reason the universe even exists. Go figure. Our lives on Earth are really nothing much more than brief trips to a spiritual gym, and we push against all these machines that help our spiritual muscles grow. One of the toughest machines in this spiritual gym is the death of a child. Of course, we know our child is still perfectly fine, waiting for us, where love never ends. And we're told as well that people who die as sub-adults or young adults are basically people who don't need any more lessons here. And they take an additional voluntary brief lifetime as a planned death, as a gift. Believe it or not all gifts are good to receive, as a gift to those that they love. I think eventually knowing that the death was planned, knowing that the child who is briefly out of our sight is fine, does help people a little bit, but at first it's of almost no help at all. And we have a lot to learn, you and I, from people who have lost a child. So we've had many bereaved parents visit with us here on Seek Reality. And I should just say as a side note for those who ask, the wonderful, extraordinary book that Mikey Morgan wrote with his mother, Flying High in Spirit, is back in print at last. And on March 5th, Carol Morgan is going to join us. Just make a note of that. But this week, our guest is a bereaved parent who I think has written an extraordinary book, and he has a lot to share with us. David Allison is an interesting guy. He's a software engineer, a consultant, an entrepreneur, and he's been building commercial software, he says, since 1984, which I find hard to believe because I didn't even think we had computers back then, but I guess we did. And he has founded some successful software companies. David's also been a writer and editor in the technology space for major publications, and he was just beginning to bring his wonderful young son and namesake, fourth generation namesake, into what looks like a really interesting work life that they were having when on July 3rd, 2016, David Allison died in a car crash at the age of 24. His father, David's book, Finding Davy, details the remarkable events surrounding and following that terrible loss of David Allison's only son. It was such a transformative experience for David the elder that he now mentors and assists other parents who have lost their children. I am so happy you're with us, David. Welcome.
Oh, Roberta, thank you so much for having me, and I really do appreciate it.
I think your book might be the one essential book for newly bereaved parents that I've come across because you touch all the bases. Your own life is very interesting and you share some of that, but just enough. And Davy, your son, was communicating right away and really in amazing ways. We're going to talk about that. And it's clear you were in terrible pain, but you worked to master your pain. You basically took that lesson and you aced that lesson, which I think is an inspiration really to all of us who are facing difficulties. You weren't spiritual before, but you became spiritual Finding Davy is a quick and easy read, so, and it's gripping. I couldn't put it down, so I just want to recommend it to everyone if you're interested in a book which shows someone who's gone through the worst thing and really triumphed. So, okay, the first thing I want to talk about, I want to talk about a bunch of things about Davy, because he is really the star of this book. He was like a regular guy, and then 3 days before he transitioned in a car crash, you didn't have any idea he was about to do this. He was suddenly transformed. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, it was Monday, July 17th, and or July 18th, excuse me. Davy came into our shared office and basically said, you know, he broke down and started crying early one morning. And I asked him what was wrong. It was very out of character for him to do that. And he said, "Dad, I finally believe in God. I finally get it. It's the most amazing feeling ever." And while we had raised our kids, I was raised in a Catholic home and had gone to Catholic school and gone through the confirmation process. And we had exposed our children to Catholic Church, but we pulled back. We pulled away from the Catholic Church over time for a variety of reasons, not to cast aspersions on the Catholic Church, but it just did not feel – it did not resonate with us.
Yes.
And so for him to all of a sudden say that – and we had been very open-minded. There was nothing, Christianity in general was not something that we were resisting against. It was really more the church proper. So he had been exposed to other forms of Christianity and had been exposed to teachings, but we were not pushing it on him. So for him to suddenly say, "Dad, I believe in God," and it's the most amazing feeling, was a little disconcerting for me.
Did he tell you what made him suddenly believe? Did he give you any details about that? Because I don't remember reading him in the book.
He didn't. That was the thing that was odd. All he wanted to know was what I thought. He said, "Dad, what do you think? What do you believe?" And I started to, you know, convey to him, "Well, you know, here's what I was taught, and then here's my engineering background and the science that I understand and embrace." As an engineer, it can be very difficult. You become very consumed with reductionist processes. You know, as a software engineer, especially if I'm trying to solve a problem, it's a process of elimination. So you have to keep eliminating things until you get at the core root cause of a problem.
Yeah, yes.
And, you know, the beauty of technology is ultimately I can dig down as deep as I need to go until I can ultimately find almost every single time exactly where the problem is. And that mindset doesn't really work with the teachings of the church, and it doesn't really work too well with so many other things because they're so subject to interpretation. And
yes.
So, as you well know, and just a little side note, I love the blog posts you've been doing the last month or so. I've been every Sunday morning. It's like, okay, here's the next one.
Thank you.
They've been awesome. Yeah, they've been really cool.
I really appreciate it. But all right, so Davy, you were worried about it. You said to your wife, yeah. And by the way, this wonderful saintly woman, her name is Allison.
Yeah.
And you need to know no more about her than that, and the fact that she is a rock. She really shines in this book, but. You were kind of alarmed, weren't you, because of this sudden transformation? What's going on with him?
Absolutely. Yeah. I at first I thought it was very sweet and interesting, and I encouraged my kids to be introspective and thoughtful, and so we engaged and talked about that. But ultimately, we were running a startup business, so I said, "Come on, let's get back to work, because we have a lot of work to do to make this company work." And, you know, he did. And then the next day he started going into it again and more frequently with more really wanting to understand the why I thought the way that I did. And that over the course of those 3 days, I was continuously moving into a state of apprehension, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the day of his accident, I woke up with this tremendous feeling of dread. And I'm an optimist. I'm an optimistic person. If there's a problem, I see it as an opportunity to implement change. So, you know, let's go get it. And it was the first time I'd really felt a sense of something wicked this way comes. That's how the only thing it was for me.
Yeah, yeah. And then that morning, you're sitting on your porch, minding your own business, maybe reading the paper, and he walks in and he hugs you and he tells you multiple times, "I will never leave you."
Yeah.
Had he ever done that before?
No. No, not at all. And it was, he was always an affectionate young man, and he was not afraid to express that, but he was the way that he did that, and it wasn't until later, obviously after the accident, because it was just a handful of hours later that the police pulled up to tell us that he had been in the accident, that and had not survived, that it really kind of took me back. It was one of those things that I kept going back to, and it became very difficult for me to detach this precognition, this kind of awareness that he had, and looking at all of the thing, those 3 days leading up to hit the actual accident, and then what happened after that, and this feeling that he was not gone, this feeling that he was very much there. At first, I just thought that was denial. You know, that was a grief coping mechanism.
Please, everyone, understand the fact that most people who are going to die, even a young guy of 24, and he's going to be in an accident and it's about to happen, most of them at a deeper level are aware this is happening. And he was basically telling his parents, I understand that there is a God, and I understand that I will never have to leave you. So I just thought that was, so many things in this book are extraordinary. I wanted to talk about your experience of light, because you're one of the very few people I've ever known who had an experience of light, that light's flashing in the room. But there's so much more in the book. We'll get back to some of this stuff if there's time. Mm-hmm. When was it that you sat down at the computer?
That was about a week after Davy's transition. So I about 8-9 days.
Okay. Yeah. So you were, it's clear from the book that his family is in anguish. He has two sisters and a mother and a father, and they'd been married for a very long time. A very tight, wonderful family. It's like you were heaven blessed until this moment.
Yes.
In your life. And then everything, and you clearly soldiered through it well, but what a terrible thing to have happen. So you sit down, did you think maybe you could communicate with him by computer?
No.
What made you do that then? You sat down, you wrote, I don't know if I can do this. Wrote it on the computer. Why?
I had actually been told, I had read online, because not long after the accident, I started doing research and looking up things on grief and how to cope with grief. You know, how do I help my wife? How do I help my daughters, my family, and how do I help myself? How do I gain some perspective here?
Yes.
And one of the things that that I had read was therapeutic, was to write a letter to the person that you have lost and try to explain to them how you feel. And because that concept, and it made sense to me, the concept of, you know, trying to express to them, because otherwise I just kept circling around those same feelings over and over again. That's how grief manifested for me.
Yes.
And so I sat down at my computer to write this letter to my son, and I got stuck. I stared at this blinking cursor. It might have been an hour or two just looking at the cursor, because I didn't know how to address the letter. Dear Davy, dear son, how do you address a letter to your child that has just died?
You know, but here's what happened.
It was hard. Yeah.
What happened was, out of this experience came one of the most extraordinary scripts I've ever seen of someone communicating with someone who has recently died. It's very unlikely for people just a week later to be able to do this. But he wrote, I don't know if I can do this. And he heard a voice in his mind, and it sounded like Davy, right?
Well, it was clearly not my voice.
Yes.
And it was in my head as though it was a complete thought. And that's the thing that's kind of hard. It's hard to describe this. You know, my wife was, she grilled me when I showed her this. You know, how, what did you hear? How did you hear it? I want to hear that. What did you do to trigger that? Because I want to trigger the same thing, right? And it was, the only way I can describe it is that it was the complete thought was in my head, fully formed. You know, when we linguistically talk about something, when we linguistically think about something, it's, we use the English language, at least I do, being an English speaker, and I kind of process thoughts that way. It's almost like a conversation, right? An inner monologue. This was a complete thought that was just there. And so I just wrote down what was there in my head.
And let's just add something. The way the dead communicate is by thought, and it's by completed thoughts, which they send to each other's minds. So he is talking with someone who is already communicating the way the people who are not in bodies anymore communicate in a completed thought. He hears, "You can, Dad. It's okay. I'm right here." Wow. So did you freak out then? Did
you? You know, it felt so natural that I just kind of went into autopilot mode. What was interesting was I would go through these moments. It was like riding the waves of grief. I was trying to express to him, because my original intent sitting down was to write him a letter. And what it ended up being was, I can't do this. Davey, I miss you so much. Why is this happening? Why? And the responses that I got from him were profound. And some of the things that he explained to me, especially about the nature of time, the nature of heaven, were just so extraordinary for me, because I didn't have – all I had was my Catholic upbringing at that point. Yes. I had not done any research into spiritual perspectives. Many of the concepts that your listeners and the readers of your books and your blogs probably take for granted. Now, I did not have those at that point.
Yes.
And so that's why for me it was such a validating thing to then start this journey into reading and researching the afterlife and finding so many affirmations of the things that Davey had told me were – you know, other people had experienced or related, and many people came to the same kind of conclusions. That was tremendously gratifying and fascinating for me.
Well, for me, what was fascinating was that you, completely naive, just like Carol Morgan, who communicates with her son, Mikey, knew zero and has actually done no research since, because Mikey has taught her everything that she knows. This is a perfect transcript of what is true. And it is the kind of thing that very few people in bodies know. And he of course, was where he now knew everything, was in his expanded mind. And he gave you this, what I think is an extraordinary transcript. I wish we could just read it. I was even thinking, you and I, you read one, I'll read the response, you know, but there's too much else in your book I want to talk about. I think what we might do is a separate session in a little while, where we specifically talk, we'll read this script. If you don't buy the book, you're going to have to come back and listen to the script, everyone. I want to talk about other things too, because I know we're going to only hit the high points today. So, all right. So this was an experience which very few people have had. You were communicating with your son, and I know that you were still in grief. What I love about your book, one of the things, is that you can really see that you were in grief and you were just trying to manage it, but you were a soldier about it too, which many people will allow grief to bend them down. And your first thought was, will I ever be happy again? And you sought that. Partly, I think, for him, because you knew he was around you, right? You kept feeling that he was right there.
I think that was part of the reason that I'm going through this experience and have been able to record this and share it with others and to help the parents that I've been blessed to be able to help, was because I've got both the background of being an entrepreneur, which is living in a state of existential crisis and being in denial about that being the reality. And so you kind of always are seeking to push to that next stage, push to what you want to accomplish and what you're trying to achieve. And the thing that I found myself trying to achieve was I am feeling his presence right now in a way that I cannot quantify intellectually. So either I have to either I have to find some and initially, quite frankly, for the first maybe month or two, the left side of my brain was constantly saying, well, you know, clearly you're delusional, or clearly you're in the stage of grief, or right. Clearly you have the following, you know, chemical reaction going on, and this is how grief manifests itself. And I mean, I could come up with all kinds of ways of explaining it away,
right?
But then it kept happening. And so I either needed to embrace it and say, well, and if I could just take that skepticism that I have that was rooted on things that weren't real anyway, and start examining, you know, the information and the data that's actual, that's available that I had never even been aware of, then all of a sudden it started to make more sense to me. And I think in some ways, quite frankly, Roberta, that helped me more than somebody who just believes.
Yeah.
Because I had to intellectually convince myself that this was A, possible. I didn't believe that consciousness could survive physical death, because consciousness is a byproduct of chemical reactions of the brain. So,
right.
A brain dies, then I guess that's the end of you. Lights turned off and everybody go home. There's nothing left to see.
Yeah.
So
clearly that's not true.
Clearly.
Right away, you started to see that was not true. But were you ever psychic before? Did you ever have a sense that you were, you know, maybe you had precognition, or you could read minds, or any kind of psychic stuff happening in your life before?
I wouldn't say psychic. I have always had an ability to know things that I don't recall ever researching, reading, understanding. They just kind of come to me. So I've had that as a kind of an understanding. I have an innate curiosity about pretty much everything. And I've always been a highly empathetic person, which has served me well in the business relationships that I have and the personal relationships that I have. So I don't know that I would say I was psychic, or I could pick the right things. If you ask and I even talk about them in my book, my poker group would tell you that no, I'm one of the most unlucky card players there is.
So, okay, well, there's a sign right there that maybe you're that psychic, because it was clear that you were rapidly developing what we would call psychic abilities, the ability to perceive people who were not. Then you started to see them. When did you start to see your loved ones?
Well, the first experience that I had where it was very clear that I was seeing Davey was a hike that I took with Davey's best friend and his father, who's a very good friend of mine. And Spencer had been, Davey and Spencer had been best friends since they were little children. And we had just, Spencer was big into hiking. We had just gotten Davey into it as well. So the four of us had gone on a backpacking trip, and it was something that we were all excited about doing, but we only got to go on one. And so I've since gone on many backpacking trips with Spencer and his dad, John. And we were doing a day hike, and it was a very early morning hike, and we were climbing up the side of a hill. And I had earlier been watching Spencer and his dad and feeling some of the pangs of grief. You know, it was still about 6 months in. And so, you know, it's really hard to watch your son's best friend and his dad.
Yeah.
To see there and be a part of it. I love that they wanted me to be a part of it, but it was also bittersweet.
Yes.
And Davey kept hearing those thoughts would pop into my head. Dad, I'm right here. Dad, I'm right here with you. And then we you know, we'd stopped our little break and we started the final ascent up the side of the mountain and the hill. And as I'm walking up this hill, all of a sudden I sense Davey's presence, and I saw him on the trail in front of me. And what I saw was Davey in, you know, he didn't have a jacket on. He was wearing a t-shirt and gym shorts, and he was in front of me and he was waving me up. You know, Dad, come on.
And you saw him.
I saw him very clearly.
He was solid. He looked like a real person.
Well, it's so hard to describe, Roberta. I wish I could give you a clear, it wasn't, you know, oh, there's no question he was right there, because when I looked at the trail where he was, I could not see him. It was only when I looked at the ground in front of me, it was focused completely on just my cadence and walking, that in my mind's eye, I could see him very clearly. I could see the trail. I could see everything up ahead of me, and he's waving me up. And the first thought in my head was not, I am seeing my dead son or I'm seeing a ghost. It was, it's like 20 degrees out and he's wearing shorts and a t-shirt. He's going to freeze. Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, he's going to get cold. Always a dad. Exactly. Yeah.
And it was this amazing experience. And I mean, I almost ran up the hill because I was desperate trying to catch him. And it was the first moment I really saw him and had one of those moments. And I had several after that. They have been actually a lot less frequent now. They were very strong early on, and they were strong with my dad as well. My dad passed 250 days after my son. So the David Reese Allison line became basically not, I'm the last one.
Yes.
So it was a kind of a difficult period to go through losing both my dad and my son in that.
Well, let's talk about your father, because that to me, that's also a very significant story. Your dad, you and your dad had not really been close, right? You had, I identify with your story because my father was also an alcoholic, and he was not a mean one. He was the quiet one or whatever. I don't know, but he was as much of an alcoholic as your dad was.
Yeah.
And he also quit cold turkey when it became too inconvenient for the family. I was 11 or 12 at the time, but that sort of kept you apart. And then, but you did go visit with him, and then he did die. But then talk about what happened after that.
Well, I had a couple of moments. It was not long after he had transitioned, which was March of 2017. And Easter Sunday, immediately after his passing, I was in our local park and walking. And as I was walking through, I had a spiritual playlist on. I have since gone into meditation, gotten very heavily into meditation, and also walking meditations, where I have a spiritual playlist that I love to play when I'm walking out in the woods. And I sensed Davy's presence. And then all of a sudden, I saw my dad next to me on the trail. I was doing a trail run. I was running through the woods. And to my right, I looked over, and there was my dad on a horse. And he had to be 18, 19 years old. He was skinny as a rail.
Yeah.
He had a white cowboy hat on. My dad had grown up on a ranch in Southern California and had done he was a ranch hand, effectively, for my grandparents' ranch. And that was the way he presented himself to me. And I saw him very clearly. I looked at the trail in front of me. I looked over to my right again, and there he was again. But this time he was in his mid-50s, or late 40s, early 50s, had a little bit of a gut on him, didn't have his hat on, but he had that big – my dad always had a big, huge smile. He loved to make people laugh. And he was right there with me. And then he was gone, and I was still running on the trail. And I rounded a corner on this trail and almost stepped in this giant thing of horse dung. I heard my dad's voice. I really was there.
His gift to you was a pile of horse dung.
And my dad always, my dad always had, and this is the thing, my dad and I had an interesting relationship, an interesting, kind of a challenging relationship. I had a deep love and respect for my dad, but it was very challenging when I was young because he was never there. He was never engaged. And there were a number of points where that manifested. And it was actually one of the reasons that I became the dad that I was. I was very involved with my kids in sports and in their education, anything, without being a helicopter parent, I was always involved. I was always there for my kids because my dad had not been for me. And it was interesting because as we started to embark on the spiritual journey and start, reaching out to mediums and trying to get readings done, as a parent that's lost a child, clearly we wanted to talk to our child, especially my wife. She was the one that would really wanted it to be to have these readings done. And my dad would pop in. And every time my dad would pop in first and he'd say, hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm here. And hey, and the medium has no idea. They're just what's happening. So, yeah, it's been a really interesting experience having both, you know, reached out to and communicated with both my dad and my son.
But also your mother, wasn't the same run? No sooner did you dodge the horse poop than you saw your mother driving in the woods? I don't know how this works.
Yeah.
With your grandmother.
Yeah. It was
Talk about that.
I got down off the top of this trail, and I was down in on a kind of a flat road area, a service road in this big, large park. It's a very wooded park, very desolate. And I was thinking, wow, you know what? I totally get that I'm going to see my dad riding a horse out here and Davey, you know, running along with me. But my mom would not run to save her life. She would never. Yeah. Or get on a horse. And then I see my mom in this 1963 Chevy Impala that she had. And she's there, and my grandmother is with her in the front seat. And I can see them as clear as anything. I could see my grandmother lean forward. She had her purse on her lap. And the I got the sense that my mom was, without her saying anything, I just knew it. My mom was driving my grandmother off to an Easter church service. And that was, you know, they were just smiling and looking at me. It was one of those, I came away from that run feeling as spiritually close and alive as I've ever felt. Just this incredible feeling of warmth radiating through me. It was a beautiful experience.
So people are asking now, well, how common is it for people to see these people who have passed? And I have to tell you, it is surprisingly common. Most people won't talk about it, but it's been estimated that widowers and widows will see the departed spouse at least 50% of the time, clearly see the departed spouse after their death. In fact, there are some who resume their sex life after their death. This is something I learned only recently. But if you are open, and I think that even though you were a skeptic, you indeed were open to these possibilities. Otherwise, this could not have happened. But because you were open, you were given more and more of it. And that's what I really encourage people to do. If you see anything extraordinary, if anything might be a sign, say, thank you, I love you, do it again. And you'll get more. Because
expressing gratitude is the single most important aspect to me of when I get a sign. We get so many signs. And I mean, some beautiful, amazing signs. And then if I have a communication, I constantly am expressing gratitude. And I think that honestly, Roberta, I think that the biggest challenge that parents face, especially because the grief is so intense, and I'm sure it is similar for anybody that's going through grief, is that we create the veil. The veil is the human side of it. It's not the spiritual side. They're not masking themselves from us. Our human experience is masking them from us.
Yes.
And that if you, and especially as a parent, and this is the thing try to convey to parents, and it seems to have been resonating, is that if you really want to be able to communicate with your child in spirit, the single most important thing to do is to recognize that you need to embrace who they are right now. If, for example, you had a 20-year-old or a 15-year-old child, and you were constantly saying to them, gosh, I loved you when you were five. You were the best when you were 5 years old. You were amazing at five. Now, hey!
Not so much.
Okay. And so if you look at your child, if you think about your child and say, I miss them so much because I'm going to focus on their physicalness. I'm going to focus on the physical, and that's all. I am not going to embrace the spiritual side of them. And what I found was that is how I created that veil. I created that gap. So it's not about finding them. It is about allowing them to be there with you so that you can see them. God, that's really it. They're around you all the time. They're here. There's no distance. There's zero distance.
One of the reasons I'm going to recommend your book to people is that in it, in that book, you may not even realize the extent to which you do this, but you show how spiritual growth actually feels and happens. Because at the end of that book, you were a very much more advanced being spiritually than you were at the start of the book. You were a regular guy at the start of the book. At the end of the book, it was extraordinary to me how much you had grown. And that is a tribute, frankly, to Davy and to your efforts to make his death worth it. I mean, he really, really brought you so far.
I think, honestly, Roberta, that there's no question in my mind that part of Davy's purpose was this. Part of my purpose in this life is this. And the thing that I can't separate from, though, is that all of the growth that I've experienced also came from people like you, people like Suzanne Giesman, people that have been out there on the front edge of this, being the shoulders on which other people will stand. That's the whole thing. This is not a single effort. It's not an individual effort. We're all in this together. And so by accepting that all of the spiritual teachings that I've had available to me now, I mean, there's so many resources available now that can help remove those doubts, remove the fears, remove the veil, start stripping that away.
Yes.
And I think that when people start to expose themselves to that, you cannot come away from that experience and not be fundamentally changed.
I want you to talk about helping parents heal, because I've watched this organization develop, and I think it's just extraordinary. So tell people a little bit about helping parents heal.
So helping parents heal, and I've been involved with the group as a volunteer for a couple of years now. It is really the focus of the group is helping parents process the grief of losing a child in a non-dogmatic way without any specific reference to any religion. Or atheists are welcome. It doesn't matter. That it's just a way of being as open-minded as possible to be able to connect with a child that has that a parent has lost. And the recently the shift has been to talk about not bereaved parents but shining light parents, and those are parents that have gotten to that next stage.
Yes, beautiful. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it's wonderful because more than anything, I've talked to hundreds of parents in grief now, and I see so many that get stuck in that cycle of grief, and that might be part of their journey. You know, this is the thing. Some people really are determined, and when I hear someone say, "I will never be happy again," I tell them, "You're right," because if that's what you believe,
that's right.
You're so much more powerful than you give yourself credit for. And if your belief system says that you must be unhappy and you must be in pain and misery, then that's what you're signing up for.
So good for you.
If that's what you want, I don't mean to say that in a trite way, and I don't mean to issue it as a challenge. It's just a recognition that this is the direction that you are in now. If you want to change that, you can. And by being an example of that, this is why it's been so important. I'm pretty raw in the book about what I've experienced because I want people to see all of it, including some of the things where I was not proud of some of the things that I've done. You know, some of the things that you do in grief are irrational. And they can be very selfish. And I talk about those in the book as well, because I think it's important for people to be able to see this as not just some pious perspective, but a very real journey.
I watched them develop. It's go to the website if you're interested, everyone, helpingparentsheal.org. It's, you know, one word, helpingparentsheal.org. But one of the spurs was the fact that other groups tend to help people wallow in grief. And helping parents heal does that. The greatest gift, if you're bereaved, that you can give to the person who is temporarily out of your sight is for you to grow spiritually from that experience. That's the greatest gift. That's the only reason why we are bereaved, because it helps us to grow spiritually. So I think they've just done an extraordinary job. They're based in the Phoenix area, but there are Helping Parents Heal chapters now, I think, all over the place, aren't there?
Even
in other countries.
Now.
Yes. So wonderful organization for anyone who has lost a child. So I'd love that you're part of that and you're helping those peer parents too. But very, very good organization. Do you have a website?
Well, the best website that talks about the book is findingdavy.com. That has some high level information about the book. And also, I've got a Facebook page, Finding Davy, that I encourage people to visit. So as I talk to people publicly, as I do presentations and things, that I try to put links to those there.
Oh, that's great.
As a resource.
Can people contact you? Is there a way for them to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's the best way to do it is through that Finding Davy Facebook page. If it is a bereaved parent, it's somebody that is going through the grief process, I am one of the caring listeners on the Helping Parents Heal website. So my contact information is up there for any parent that is kind of going through that, because it can be so difficult in the early stages. And
yes,
it's, quite frankly, this is something that I do not just for them. I do it for myself as well, because I get so much growth out of helping someone else.
I'm sure. So what would you tell people who have just lost a loved one, maybe a child or maybe, you know, a spouse or a close parent or something? What would you tell them that they should do?
Well, the first thing I believe is to just allow yourself that time to grieve, because everybody grieves differently. Every grief is different. And if you can try to compare it with someone else and say, well, this isn't happening nearly as fast as did for that person, it's okay, because each of us have our own journey. We each have our own process to do that. But as you're going through that, try and be as open-minded as possible, because if you recognize there's only one thing that I tend to be non-prescriptive in everything that I say, because I do believe that every person can figure these things out for themselves. Avail yourself of the knowledge of, you know, all that's available. But the one thing that I'm pretty adamant about is that the belief system that you have is yours and yours alone. And if your belief system is holding you back, if your belief system says, well, that's just the way it is, and if you can't question your belief system and explore it and understand the why behind it, then it might not be your belief system. It might have been one that was handed to you.
And oh, right.
Because that's just the way that it works. So it's incumbent on us. This is the one thing that you have. Nobody can make you believe something that you don't accept. And if you don't believe me, then you just proved it, because that's the whole concept, is you really do. It is you get to accept that. And I think that's where I see people struggle the most, is that they get caught up in a very stringent. And if that's what they want, then that's fine. But if you want to be out of that pain, if you want to move to a different perspective, then you have to allow yourself that. And that means adjusting your belief system so that you can change your perspective. That's what I needed.
If people are, yes, but the point is, you did it really beautifully, partly because you weren't stuck in a religion. Religions can really get in the way when you're in these situations. And that's, I think, telling people it's a choice. If you were given those beliefs and they don't serve you now, you really can make another choice. And you're not leaving God. You're not leaving Jesus. They're waiting for you wherever you decide you need to be right now. The religions are not of God. They are of man. So you have a choice. That is beautiful. We're going to do this again. I will be in touch with you shortly, because we have a whole bunch of other stuff from this book that I want to talk about. And I love giving publicity to Helping Parents Heal as much as we can, because I really think that they're a model for other kinds of bereavement groups as well.
And they've got a new group called Helping Siblings Heal that is specifically for children that are siblings that have lost one. So that's it's a great group. I've every person that I've met through Helping Parents Heal has just been amazing. They're just beautiful, wonderful people.
So. Yes. Well, and you're another one, sir. This has been delightful. Thank you so much for being here. Consider yourself hugged. And everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I'm really glad you could be with us today. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really get what that means, it does change everything in your life for the better. Next week, we're going to be talking with Dr. Sharon Prentice. Sharon had what's called a shared death experience when her husband died, and it profoundly affected her. So she set out to study the experiences of other people who had experienced something which she calls weird, unbelievable, or odd at the time of the death of a loved one. Her resulting book is called Becoming Starlight, and it has a foreword from Dr. Raymond Moody. Now, Dr. Moody is the one who coined the term near-death experiences, and he coined the term shared deathbed experiences. So he basically has covered the field, and he loves this book. He said, hold on to your hat when you read this book. Becoming Starlight is truly sensational. He's not given to her hyperbole at all, but I love that. I love that he's such an enthusiastic man, and this is a lovely book. Near-death experiences don't happen in the afterlife. They're not related to actual death, but shared deathbed experiences are an amazing glimpse behind the curtain that is just an actual death is happening, and we get to peek behind, and they're extraordinary too. I really enjoyed her book, and I think you're going to very much enjoy hearing what Dr. Prentice has to tell us. So please join us next week. Of course, this week we've been talking with David Allison. I just love this book. Finding Davy is literally the best book that you can read if you have lost a child. I've never seen a better one. And if you have lost anybody in your life close to you, I feel the same way about it. Because it tells you, it's an interesting book. He's got a fascinating life. But it tells you what the steps are, how to handle the grief, what is possible for you. And it's short, too. It's to the point. Also, I really want to put in a plug for helpingparentsheal.org. Go to that website. This is an organization, really, that is helping the world. It was necessary. It was essential. And here it is. As you know, my own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and very soon, The Fun of Loving Jesus, Embracing the Christianity that Jesus Taught. For young children, there's The Fun of Meeting Jesus, beautifully illustrated. I can say that because I didn't draw those illustrations. And you can order all these books through bookstores or on Amazon.com, and the adult books are also available as audiobooks. If you want to talk with me about any of my books or really anything at all, you always can contact me through robertagrimes.com. I answer every email. Just please be sure to give me your correct email address. And if you're enjoying these weekly conversations, thank you, David. That was wonderful. You gave me a plug. You might want to check out my blog at robertagrimes.com. If you sign up there, it'll just come to you every Sunday. And it's how I work through what I'm working on now. But many people, I mean, I hear from people now who say they wait, they keep hitting refresh on their computer until it shows up. I guess it's that regular. But do, if you have a chance, come and check out my blog.
Highly recommend that. It's amazing.
Yeah. There you are. Thank you. It's very important that all of us understand we are on different journeys, and we're helping each other on our journeys. I will never tell you don't hold to your religion. I will never, and neither would David. I would never tell you what you believe is wrong. What I will tell you, though, is that you have the power to control your life and to learn and to grow spiritually from all these things that happen to you. There are no tragedies. And the reason I say that is nobody ever dies. The people that we love are not even harmed in their deaths. Mikey Morgan was also in a horrible car accident. He said he was out of his body before the accident happened. I think that's true of Davey, true, right?
He
didn't have any pain. All the things that we think are horrible that people go through, they really are not harmed at all. This isn't real life. We will go home to real life in a little while. And what we want to do, if we possibly can, is to take home as much spiritual growth as is possible for us. If you've lost a child, that child gave you a tremendous gift. If you can see that gift, then you will be able to honor that child's life in ways which David Allison is honoring his son's life in ways probably beyond what Davy even expected you to do. But nevertheless, this is what life is all about. And you can triumph over all of it. So, again, if you need to talk with me, I am here. If you want to talk with David, I am here, and he'll talk to Davy for you. All of us are eager to help you with what is the most important thing you can possibly do in your life, which is to really, really grow spiritually. So, we're here. But meanwhile, remember, this is Seek Reality, and I'm always here from you every week. I'll keep doing this for as long as I'm able to talk, so we'll see how long that is. But it's so important to me to help you as much as I can to get as far as we can get together. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please always enjoy and make the most of this week and every week in our shared reality here. But never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you in particular are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.